Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk, will be here for the second and third segment, as he usually is on Thursdays, with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. We will go ahead and get right to the gold and silver closes for Thursday, June 9th, 2016. You know, it just gets crazier and crazier today. I had to chuckle a little bit. I guess Obama came out and endorsed Hillary, and he's had three meetings in the past week with Bernie Sanders, and I could just imagine what those meetings, you know, he's probably begging little old Bernie to, hey, can't you bow out gracefully and just let Hillary have it? I mean, after all, Obama says, you know, they're going to let me live in a $6 million home here in Washington, D.C., buddies of the Clintons. And, you know, can't you just quit? Would you please stop and just let Hillary have it? I mean, it was the L.A. Times, the Monday night before their elections for the primaries, pretty much said that she was the candidate. And, you know, a lot of people came away with thinking, well, there was really no reason to vote, you know, and it's the first time I ever saw in a publication the evening before saying that it was pretty much a done deal, that she was the elected, she was the elected elite. But anyway, it's we'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the program. Let me first get to the market for gold and silver, the New York spot price today. Gold, it was up $650 for gold today at $1,270. Not the high, but close. Silver was up 25 cents today at $1,736. Pressure on both platinum and palladium, with platinum being down 6 at $1,007 and palladium down 2 at $564. USDX today was stronger, up 0.46 at 94.03. So interesting to see the dollar stronger with gold being stronger, but there's a few reasons for that. We'll, you know, I'll mention here in just a bit. Crude oil was down 0.62 at 50.61. And the paper markets today, the Dow was down 20 points, 17,985. The NASDAQ was down 16 at 4,958, and the S&P was down 3 at 2,115. The 10-year yield, 1.68, down 0.03. pressure on the euro to be expected with the strength in the dollar. 1.13, down 0.64. London and Germany both down. World markets were pretty much negative across the board, and all eyes are beginning to concentrate and focus on the Brexit. And I got a little article on the Brexit and gold buying in England. But first, Wall Street Journal surveyed 66 economists from June 3rd to June 7th. The forecasters generally see an economy in peril, not just a slowing down of an economy, just maybe things not as good as last year or whatever, but in peril, surrounded by risks from around the world. In addition to the potential fallout from Britain leaving the EU, many see the possibility that a slowdown in China's economy would batter the U.S. All along, they continue to tell us that, what happens in China won't affect us. Well, I do disagree with that. I think if China's economy continues to slow, absolutely. We are a world that is connected. The U.S. dollar being stronger, lower energy prices, that will continue to hurt U.S. exporters and manufacturers, and as well as the U.S. oil companies. The manufacturing industry has lost 39,000 jobs in this past year. We've seen job losses in the mining, logging industry that have lost 130,000 jobs. We haven't seen anything yet. We have yet to feel the full impact of oil dropping down to 25. Yes, it has reversed itself to 50, and we'll have to see if it holds there. But the big risk for the U.S. is that there's simply no offsetting factor to the energy and manufacturing slowdown. The U.S. energy boom had been the bright spot until the oil prices plunged, and they continue to remain low in the 2014 and 2015. About 76% of the respondents said that if their forecasts are wrong, it will likely be because the economy does worse. They're not expecting if their forecasts are wrong that the economy might do better, but it will do worse. Only 16% think that the economy is more likely to do better than their forecasts. Folks, we've been telling you this for a long time. We've been telling you for a long time. Fiat currency, inflation, the economy, it's a credit bubble. Every recession for 30 years or more. We never came out of any of those recessions. The recessions were covered up by credit, by debt. They created bubbles with each exit of these recessions. And here we are today. Economists generally think that the U.S. will be able to avoid tilting all the way into a recession. No, we're still in one. They see an average of 21% chance of being in a recession within the next 12 months. And those odds have been little changed since February, but are about double the odds from 1 year ago. Some of the sellers of U.S. stocks, investors outside the country, dumped $128 billion in American shares over the past year. This is data from the U.S. Treasury International Capital System. Despite the higher quality of companies in the U.S., long-term investors may be drawn to the faster pace of growth in other economies. I don't know where the faster growth of other economies exists, but I think perhaps that report was from BNP Paribas, Stuart Walther. He's an equity strategist, and I don't know if I'd put much faith in that, because again, where is the faster growth in other economies other than Japan, other than Europe, when they're slapping in trillions of dollars into their economies with stimulus? Suppose you're getting a little bit better growth out of those economies than ours, with China dumping or dropping their value of their currency. And I suppose that would reflect into a little bit better economy than what the U.S. is doing. We have to bring up Bill Gross. He used to work for PIMCO, biggest bond company, and now he's the manager of $1.4 billion Janus Global Unconstrained Bond Fund. But he warned that central bank policies that push trillions of dollars into bonds with negative interest rates will eventually backfire, and it will backfire violently. He says global yields lowest in 500 years of recorded history. This is a 4x4, folks. He wrote today, $10 trillion of negative rate bonds. This is a supernova that will explode one day. And there's even some banks I was reading about today that are beginning to hold their own cash because they don't want to give it to the central bankers and get negative rates. But they're still going to be losing purchasing power as you take in inflation. So, you know, maybe they're not getting the double whammy. They're only getting the inflation and not the negative rate. But $10 trillion in negative rates, the numbers just don't seem to mean anything anymore. And that's the problem. I mean, am I the only one in the world that thinks, other than Bill Gross, that thinks $10 trillion is an unbelievable number? He says a supernova is a star at the end of its life that suddenly increases greatly in brightness because of a catastrophic explosion that ejects most of its mass. He says he has argued for some time that the economy is at the end of a decades-long cycle of expanding credit. And that's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the credit bubble. I've been talking about it forever. Al brought it up earlier in this week. In the newsletter, go to our website, dgscoins.com, sign up for a newsletter. We do put in the credit bubble bulletin from Doug Noland every week as he documents the progression of the global bubble. And that's what it is. It will break and we're closer to it. And this is what you should be ready for. And this is what you should be reading. This is what you should be studying. You shouldn't be get too excited about an ex-CIA agent who claims to have an insider gold finger that will tell you how to profit. We might talk about that if we have time. I doubt if we'll have time. Maybe we'll bring it up tomorrow. But I got an email from a very good client, and she says, what do you think about this? And it just makes me laugh. And, but when you dive into it just a little bit, you can see who these people are and what their game is. I mean, if he, you know, this person claims he's going to take, he's taking, what, $115,000 worth of equipment and a crew to videotape this interview with a guy who doesn't want to give his name. He doesn't even want to be on camera. He wants to be disguised. Well, why do you need that much film equipment if you don't want to be recognized? You don't want your name given. Why don't you just take an audio recorder? That's all you really need. So I don't know. It's anyway, back to Gross. So again, here he is talking about the supernova, talking about the serious conditions that we are, talking about the negative rates, and that it's really doing nothing, spurring any type of economic growth. Low rates are promoting asset bubbles as investors reach for higher yields. It punishes the individual saver and industries that rely on interest rates, such as banks and insurance companies. They just get hammered. He said investors should eventually take positions to protect principal or profit from market declines. And what is the best item to protect your purchasing power? And you know it. It's gold. You know, they talk about his fund, his bond fund, is up 3.2% this year, outperforming 72% of Bloomberg peers. Well, you know what? Gold has outperformed even Bill Gross in the Janus Global Unconstrained Bond Fund by 17%. And we haven't seen anything yet. So I don't think they have much to brag about. But this year, we can brag about gold being up 20% from the first of the year and outpacing his 3.2% gain by 17. Got about 4 minutes left until the break. Let's talk about the Brexit and gold. There's a gold showroom in London's Mayfair district. Sharps Pixley. They said demand for bullion bars and coins is rising. Men and women of all ages are buying up the safe haven metal in case of a British exit from the European Union. And this kind of just confirms the human nature, how they wait until the last minute. That is going to be, what, June 23rd? Here it is June 9th, and now people are rushing in to get their gold and silver. Shoppers can walk into their showroom. They can walk out with their gold investments. They can leave them in safety deposit boxes inside the firm. The sales have picked up since the latest polls suggested that the Leave campaign is gaining support, showing that at the weekend it had taken a 4 to 5 percentage point gain ahead of the June 23rd referendum. So again, that campaign is gaining support to leave. Seems to have sunk into people's consciousness that Brexit is a real possibility now. All stocks are being bought out in advance. That's the gold stocks. All gold stocks are being bought out in advance of being shipped. He says, noting that the demand for the Britannia coins, which as the legal currency are exempt from capital gains tax, had been particularly strong. They had a preconception of who the typical gold buyer was. Male, mature and over 45. But they're seeing something totally different. They are now seeing younger and more females that are in there buying gold. ATS Bullion nearby on London Strand has also reported a 5 to 10% rise in sales. Though interest in gold is markedly higher this year everywhere in the UK, it is significantly ahead, and they are going to attribute that to Brexit. Another company, Pure Gold Company, said it had seen a 19% increase in inquiries to buy gold bars over the weekend compared to last week. So they're looking to hedge against the Brexit risk. And with gold, can choose from a range of small investment products. You know, they sell a lot of bars and, you know, a lot of Swiss francs, a lot of British sovereigns. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, the Britannia coins, because they do get a tax benefit. And you do get a tax benefit here, too, on the pre-1933 $20 gold pieces. So there is something to be said to be buying those older coins. The key thing is to be a little diversified in your portfolio. That's the key. So the things are picking up in England, and people are waiting at the very last moment to buy instead of being ahead of the curve. If you wait for the very last minute, then it really could be too late. So I think we're going to see a pickup in gold and silver. I don't believe you'll see gold 12. We're not going to break down in below 1200 anymore. Watching a little bit of CNBC this morning, and they did it in a light move. It wasn't a very serious conversation, but one of the anchors had actually purchased some Canadian maple leaves, and he was talking about where he wanted the physical metal, and he wanted to have it. Don't know how many he bought. He didn't offer up. But I thought it was interesting that they had actually had that conversation, where normally they just sort of confirm what Warren Buffett does. It's just a piece of nothing. It just sits there and does nothing. And the anchor who bought it had often said that. 1-800-375-4188. You know, don't wait until something happens, you know, like the people in England are doing, waiting 20 days until the possibility that they might actually exit the Eurozone. Don't wait. Get prepared. Give us a call, 800-375-4188. Alfred and James will be joining you right after these few short commercials.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll-free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Yeah. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Our guest is James Corbett, who's been living and working in Japan since 2004. He's a regular guest on this program. He started the CorbettReport.com website in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. He's also an editorial writer for the International Forecaster. James is Canadian by birth, and I'm curious, James, have you become a Japanese citizen, or is it even possible? You're married, you've got a couple of kids in Japan, you've been there for, what, something like 12 years now?
Yeah, this is my 12th year. Citizen?
Huh?
Yeah, it is technically, theoretically possible, but it is not easy. Not a lot of people successfully do it, and I only know a couple of people who have ever done it. It's extremely difficult. It's like it's one of those countries, like Switzerland or whatever, that not a lot of people do take citizenship. But it is theoretically, technically possible, yes. But I haven't done it.
Is Japan as open to visitors? I'm not sure if that's how you describe yourself as a visitor as opposed to a citizen. Are they as open to foreigners coming into their country as Switzerland, or do you even find a certain amount of resistance to people from other countries?
Right. Well, foreign residents are permitted, but under very strict conditions, usually. There are exceptions, like with Brazil, which actually has a large Japanese expat population They do have a sort of exchange with. So you will see a lot of the factory menial workers in some of the poorer parts of Japan are actually Brazilian Japanese. So it's an interesting phenomenon. But yes, generally speaking, the foreign workers that are here are technical specialists, either in finance or something like that, or more often than not, English teachers, like what I came over as.
What do you suppose drives the Japanese people to be interested in emigrating to Brazil? Is Japan suffering from overpopulation, or is it just too unstable with problems of earthquakes, for example? What pushes them in order to say, I think we'll move to Brazil?
It has to do with some specific part of the past. There was a Japanese immigration wave that arrived in Brazil in 1908. And I don't know the history of that. There is some historical background to that. I'm not sure who went there or why, but that created this Japanese population in Brazil to the point where I believe one of the former presidents was actually ethnically Japanese, president of Brazil. But anyway, that's the way it works. I don't know why that happened, but there was some specific linkage there. But now it kind of goes the other way, where you have Brazilians who are ethnically Japanese who have come back to Japan.
Okay. All right. Now, that's interesting. What we're saying then is that the people coming back, the Brazilians that are coming back, are ethnically and genetically Japanese, as opposed to just being pure Brazilians, if you catch my drift.
Or at least have Japanese roots somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just one last question on that. Have the Japanese been assimilated into the Brazilian population, or have they maintained a certain amount of distance of their own?
Excellent question. And I don't know. I honestly don't know enough about that situation to be able to comment. I know that the real big wave of immigration was back in the 20s and 30s. And even at that time, it was only 100, 150,000 people, something like that. I mean, it wasn't a huge transplant. And so all in all, from throughout the 20th century, I believe it was something like on the order of 250,000 Japanese that that immigrated to Brazil. In terms of how they've integrated or to what extent they've faced prejudice, I'm not really sure. But I'm just checking the Wikipedia on it as we speak, and there is a section on prejudice and forced assimilation. So maybe there is there's a story there.
Let's move over and we'll talk a little about England. Here's an article from wearechange.org. And the headline is, "Has the UK government lost its mind? Conspiracy theorists to be sent to retraining camps." It seems the United Kingdom government has officially turned into Big Brother. Recently, the UK government passed a shocking piece of legislation, a hate speech law that prohibits hate speech on social media and carries a sentencing of re-education camps for offenders. Re-education camps were proposed in the U.S. and circulated by, but now the U.K. has actually activated them. This idea was proposed here, apparently, in the United States, but the U.K. has established, if you are engaged in hate speech, you can be sent to a retraining camp. So the question is, who decides what is and what isn't hate speech? What do you think about this law? Is this a major... is it significant or is this a minor bump in the road?
It is significant insofar as it's the formalization of a policy that can, or a system of laws that can be used to enforce certain political policies. And I think we have to keep in mind with any legislation that all laws are political in nature and selectively enforced. So it always depends on how they choose to apply the law, whom they choose to apply it to, in what context, and, you know, what kind of precedent they end up setting with this. As far as I know, I don't know of anyone who has been successfully prosecuted under this law yet. But once we start to get some case examples of it, I think we'll be able to see. But of course, it's always the question of, well, if it's sitting there on the shelf, even if they are not using it right now, the point is they can always pull it out when and if they want to and say, hey, look, it's on the books. So that's the way I tend to go with these types of things. It's the formalization of tyranny, which may or may not already exist at a certain level, but they're putting it in black and white, which is, I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing when you think of it in its historical context, because even the Nazi regime or governments like that in the past, it didn't usually formalize their tyranny. They didn't put it in black and white in quite as blatant a way as the UK and US governments have done in recent years.
Yeah, it's right out of 1984. I mean, it's just astonishing. And given England's history and, you know, culture for the past centuries, you would think it would be one of the last places on earth where you would find this sort of draconian, you know, law being passed in order to subject people to government authority. Do you think this would affect someone like Nigel Farage?
Yes, I mean, it could.
I mean, is it intended for people like you and maybe me, insofar as we talk about conspiracy theories? Is it intended to stop us, or is it intended to stop people like, I can't think, what is it, the Independence Party?
The UKIP, UK Independence Party. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's a good question, because it could either be they use the prosecution of low-lying people like, you know, you and me and whoever has, you know, an access to a Twitter account or what have you, in order to set the precedent, in order to build up the public awareness of this legislation and the ability of the government to do this. And then they go after the political big fry opponents like Nigel Farage or who have you. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe they go after the big name people first in order to establish the precedent, and then they can crack down on anyone and everyone they want to after that. I'm not sure which would be tactically better for them, but then again, I'm not one of the psychopathic strategists who tries to think these things out. But again, it'll be interesting to see which of those tacts they decide to go on.
Do you think they can? Do you think this law is going to hold in England, or will it be rejected unfairly? First time they try it, or first a few times they try it, it's going to be rejected, or will it be allowed?
Again, it's a good question, and I'm not familiar enough with the UK judiciary to be able to understand, you know, how likely laws are to be struck down by the courts in the UK. Again, it's I wish my UK brethren the best of luck. In fact, most of my extended family is still in Britain, so I'm sure I'll be hearing stories directly if and when they start really cracking down on people.
Well, maybe you have relatives in London, you know, in the sense that the Nazis once say, maybe you had relatives in Dusseldorf.
Right.
Better cooperate, better stop your conspiracy theories, and or we're going to go after your family. I've got another one in Europe. This is deals with France. This is from Rumor Mill News, and it maybe is a rumor. And we'll see if this is news or is it noise. The headline says, media blackout as France witnesses biggest revolution in 200 years. As France prepares to host millions of visitors at the Euro 2016 football championships, a state of emergency has been extended in the country as it faces its largest protests in recent history. Hundreds of thousands of citizens have taken to the streets in France, amounting to what some are calling a new French Revolution, amid a total media blackout in Western news outlets. Is that an accurate depiction of what's happening in France right now, or is it hype?
Well, without being on the ground, I can only give my sense from overseas, but I think there certainly are... I mean, there are mass protests going on. As we discussed last time, the idea of mass protests happening in France in the summer is not itself particularly strange, but the size of these are, again, quite impressive. I don't know about yourself, but I have only seen this reported in the alternative media, in the English language anyway. I'm sure there is a lot more reporting going on in French, but in terms of international coverage, all I see about this is in the alt media, which tends to give some amount of credence to the fact that there is a coordinated effort not to mention this. I mean, I guess there are a lot of things going on in the news these days, but surely this would rate at least a passing mention in the global news updates of, you know, your major network news outlets.
When you say that there's a coordinated effort to conceal this evidence or conceal these reports, does that constitute a conspiracy theory of the sort that would get you sent to camp back in England?
Probably would, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
But then again, I would say my conspiracy theory of media control is more nuanced than most of them. I generally don't think that it is a group of people necessarily controlling what happens in each and every news outlet in the world. I think it's the main news wires tend to be controlled outlets. And from that is where most editors in most radio and TV and print news gets their news from and their sense of what the news is. So if it doesn't make a big appearance in the news wires, it's not going to make a big appearance in your nightly news. And that's not some person, you know, directly threatening editors, you know, you better not say this, or you better talk about that. It's just the way it works. And it's the way it's worked since the centralization of news delivery in really the 19th century through outlets like the AP and Reuters and outlets like that, and put that in the context of the really incredible, the mind-boggling, the mind-blowing story that took place a couple of days ago that I'm sure a lot of people saw and didn't even think twice about. But the AP coming out the day before the California primaries to say that these unelected, unknown, you know, these superdelegates in the Democrat Party have basically decided that Clinton is now the nominee. Before California even had the chance to vote on it, they said it's already a done deal. She's the nominee. That is a pretty amazing story. And that seems to me a pretty startling example of the media making the news rather than the media reporting the news. And that I've only seen a few reactions from that so far, but I think I'm going to drill down and look for some more media reactions to it. Because really, I think that sort of reporting is quite unprecedented in recent history.
Have you heard of a presidential election similar to this one in American history? I mean, there may be some that were as bizarre as this in the 1800s, but I can't think of anything in modern times.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, there have been a lot of colorful elections in the distant past, and things were a lot more heated in previous centuries. But yes, in modern history, and certainly within my living memory, there has been nothing like this. And unfortunately, I mean, there is a certain delight that we might take in that, because there are a lot of people saying, you know, burn the system down. But unfortunately, when you have that impulse to burn the system down, a lot of people gets caught in the vice grip of the forces that are at play here. And we started to get a taste of that. Was it last week in San Jose, I want to say, where we started to see the violence erupting, people attacking Trump, people at a Trump rally. There was people who were attacking them. There's that footage that got spread around the internet of the woman, and they were throwing eggs at her, and there was a man getting punched in the side of the head. Cold cocked. That to me represents just the thin edge of this wedge that's being driven through the heart of American society right now. And I don't think that does. I mean, I understand the people who want to see the end of the status quo, but it doesn't come peacefully or happily most of the times through history, if history is any guide to this. So I really do worry about the way this violence is going to start playing out.
Then you don't see this as just a fluke. This is just, gee, the strangest, isn't this a heck of an election? Strangest thing I've ever seen. And 4 years from now, we'll be back to normal. You see this as perhaps signaling something more radical?
Yes, very much so. I think the obvious example of this is, no matter who gets elected in November, will the other side just quietly go away? I think it will, if anything. I can't imagine an outcome to this that will not exacerbate by a thousandfold the tensions that already exist in American society.
Yeah, this has been building for years. It's been slowly building, and I understand it, because I've been anti-government for, I don't know, since 1983, really. Went through divorce, and that got me started, and then started publishing a magazine in 1990. And at the time, we were regarded as the lunatic fringe. I haven't changed much, and yet we are now, you know, more not the lunatic fringe anymore. We are, and this is evidence that the country is moving in a direction toward radical change. Let's take a break for a couple of commercials. I'll be back with James Corbett in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%
of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. I saw one of your videos just lately, James, that dealt with open source resources, things that you can find on the internet for free. And one of the subjects that you touched on was an organization called Open Source Ecology, which I thought was one of the most they've got an idea that struck me as one of the most brilliant and potentially revolutionary that I've maybe ever seen. And it goes something like this. You can correct this if I'm making mistakes. But a Polish immigrant who has a degree in fusion physics realized that he was fundamentally useless, and therefore he decided to become a farmer, and one thing led to another. And he and others he's associated with, they identified 50 fundamental machines that are necessary to maintain culture, civilization, whatever. If you want to have a workable community, you need these 50 machines. And they devised plans to build the machines rather than buy them. They would build their own at substantial savings, and they were providing the plans to build these machines on their website. For example, they're building a tractor. They're building their own tractor to work on their farms. This is an extraordinary concept to me. We live at a time when multinational corporations are going to replace us with robots. And here comes this guy from Poland. He says, wait a second, you can build your own machines. He's talking about tractors, wind turbines, electric motors and generators, and building your own truck. You care to comment? Open source ecology, would you care to comment on that?
Well, I am as impressed with the idea as you are. I think it really is the promise of what the internet could or should be, which is sharing the sum total of human knowledge and collaborating on projects that with people that you don't even necessarily ever meet in person. You don't have to see them. You don't have to know them. You don't have to know everything about how to design a tractor or a dairy milker or a truck or a hay cutter from start to finish. But if you know a specific part that would slot into something like that and which would make it better, then you can add that to the design and it becomes this group effort. But a group effort that isn't coordinated by anybody, and nobody's forcing anyone to do anything, and no one's being paid for any of this work. They're doing it because they love doing this or that little thing, and all together it adds up to something. And that to me really is, I mean, an incredible example of what is possible. And the idea here, as you say, is to come up with the 50 farm implements that would be absolutely basic tools that are needed to have a complete functioning agricultural system. And if we can get all of those designed in an open source fashion so that you can download the blueprints for free and then start constructing them with materials that you have there and tools that you have lying around, how incredible an idea would that be, and how potentially freeing is it? And to me, that's the type of idea I'm interested in so much more than wrestling over the ring of political power and what kind of legislation can we pass to get the government to do this or that. No, what can we actually do for ourselves? What can we take into our own hands quite literally and start working on today? And these are the types of ideas that I'm excited and passionate about.
I saw a part of the video that's associated with the, open source ecology. And anyone listening, you can Google this, open source ecology. I think you'll be impressed and perhaps even amazed. I saw a video of one of their homemade tractors. And all of a sudden, and you look at it and you realize, you don't absolutely have to have a tractor that's got GPS and Wi-Fi and air conditioning and the rest of that sort of thing. You mean that you need a machine that has a solid frame and an engine and a motor and some wheels and whatever, and you can pull things. All right? All of a sudden, you don't need horses. You can replace them with a tractor that you can build yourself instead of buying one for, who knows, $100,000 or $250,000.
Exactly.
I don't know how fast.
Yep.
You can actually build one of these things for a relatively small amount of money, and you can run your own farm. I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, if the multinational corporations that seem determined to run this world, they're not going to provide people with adequate jobs. Will the people not only stop buying products from the multinational corporations, but actually start to build their own machines? It's really an extraordinary, it's a revolutionary concept. We are ingrained with the idea that you want a car, you got to buy one. Got to take out a loan at the bank. Maybe not.
Well, let me blow your mind. OSVehicle.com, they are working on and developing the blueprint for an open source electric modular build-yourself vehicle that they do have a working prototype of, and that you can go and download the blueprints for right now if you were so inclined and had the tools and the resources and wanted to work on it. So you can download a car. It's already being worked on.
Well, you know, one of the things that interests me about this is, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but there's such a thing as 80%. You can buy the lower receiver for an AR-15, for example, a rifle. And that is, by law, that's the gun, the lower receiver. And it's just a portion that has the trigger assembly and maybe the handle on there. And that's the gun, legally. The barrel and the stock and whatever, those are all essentially accessories. But the gun is at lower receiver. You can purchase a lower receiver that's 80% finished. And if you complete it, it's no longer subject to regulation by the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. This is yours. It is deemed that if you do the last 20% of the work, you don't have to register this. You can buy the rest of the gun yourself with. You don't need any permission. You don't need a background check to buy the barrel, to buy the stock, to buy whatever. You don't need that. That you can make your own firearms. I'm wondering if the same idea could apply to automobiles. If I build my own automobile, do you think I have to license it?
Yeah. Well, I don't really know what the legal precedent for that
Neither
is.
Neither do I. But
that's one of the things that it tends to, I mean, legislation follows what people do. So that, you know, even 10 years ago, if you said, you know, I'm going to start a business where I go around picking people up and dropping them off at where they want to go for money, but I'm not a taxi, and I'm not going to get licensed as a taxi company, and I'm not going to jump through those hoops. People would say, you can't do that. You need it. You have to be licensed. You have to run a taxi company, and you have to run it this way. Well, Uber or Lyft comes along and just creates an app that does essentially that, and it becomes reality, and people, cities might scramble afterwards to try to set laws about it. But I think it's the people who are at the forefront of that are pushing that. And once it's out there, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle. But on that note about the lower receiver, you might remember a few years ago, Defense Distributed came out with their 3D printable AR-15 lower receiver, which is capable of lasting more than 650 rounds, even though it is 3D printed, you know, from plastic material.
Extraordinary things are happening, and it brings up another interesting question. How relevant is government in a world where you can build your own tractors and your own rifles and your own automobiles? Is government going to be able to withstand the force of this innovation? Or are they going to continue
so.
To grow?
I really don't think so.
I don't think they are either. I think
to me,
big
yeah, this is the real question going forward for humanity, is whether we are going to embrace, accept, work with, and use these tools that are available and understand them for the political revolution that they are.
Yeah.
Or we're going to just, you know, fall in line and go with the status quo. And it may not be such an easy choice to make as that might make it seem, because, of course, there are all the societal and economic influences that are going on at the moment that may and political, of course, that may come in between here and there. But to me, this is the real chance for freedom in the future. It's going to be either we embrace this and use these technologies for the liberating effect that they can have, or we just step in line and join the corporatocracy and become, you know, numbered sheep that ultimately one day will just get sheared.
One of the things that really impresses me, again, about the 50 machines, and I'm looking at one of their pages. They don't have plans for all 50 machines. They've identified them, and they are working on plans. If I had to guess, they've got maybe 8 or 10 where the plans are available, and the rest of them, they are waiting to be devised, but they're identified, these 50 machines. They have a linear solar concentrator, universal seeder, a dimensional sawmill, rod and wire mill, press boards, plasma center, pelletizer, nickel iron batteries. Make your own batteries, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, this is extraordinary stuff, and it's not merely because you can make these things. It's because in the process of making them, you're going to learn to understand what these machines are. This is not just a question of having machines. It's a question of understanding. It's a question of educating yourself and saving a bunch of money in the process. And I don't know how this is going to work out, but this is the grounds for a whole new industrial revolution.
Yes.
This is the same idea as the 3D printer.
Exactly. This is every bit as revolutionary as the Industrial Revolution
was,
because what the Industrial Revolution did was take the kind of cottage industries of decentralized labor that was happening in all these different local locations and centralized it into a manufacturing process that included assembly lines and factories and all of that that we now take for granted as the only way things can be manufactured. Mm-hmm. This revolution is breaking that apart and putting it back down to the local level, but with the same technologies that were capable of mass producing things in the first place. So it is win-win for humanity, lose-lose for the people who are currently in charge of the current status quo, the big corporations and big government. So it's very clear the writing is on the wall if this can be pushed through to its conclusion. And just to back up what you're saying there, the prototype that they've designed through this open source ecology for example, a open source bulldozer, their prototype materials cost $20,000, prototype materials and labor $23,000. Compare that to the John Deere 650J crawler dozer, $137,772. So $117,000 savings by doing it yourself. It's a no-brainer. And once this people catch on to this and take the time to learn about this process and how to do it, there's just no going back from that.
Yeah. And another point is that you buy one of these, if you build your own machine, you may not have to borrow any money to do so. You might be able to get your friends and relatives and whatever to kick in. You might not have to borrow any. Most farmers today are so deeply in debt, they'll never get out. They're buying a new tractor, and it seems like a great idea. They are buying their seed on credit. They do everything on credit. And as a result, they are something like debt slaves. They start building their own tractors and find a way to do this without going to the bank every year to borrow more money. And all of a sudden, they might become legitimately prosperous again. This is really a revolutionary technology, a revolutionary concept. I'm just blown away by it. And again, I recommend any of you, when you're listening, take a look for open source ecology. Do a search on this. This is extraordinary. We've got maybe 2 minutes left. James, do you have anything you'd like to add on open source ecology, or is there something else that people should be watching this week?
Well, there's a lot of things. Brexit, of course, is coming in a couple of weeks, but I guess we still have time to talk about that. And the Bilderberg meeting is taking place this weekend, but, we can only guess at the scraps that come from their table as to what the agenda for the next year is. But on the open source idea, I hope people will take a look at that video that you're talking about that I did, Open Source Solutions, an open source investigation, where the Corbett Report community is currently putting together resources like open source ecology and things like that. And so far we've got couple dozen links now to all sorts of things, including do-it-yourself liquid nitrogen at home, as well as more mundane things like Ethereum and Bitmessage and open recipes and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's so many different ways that this can be applied. I think it truly is the big hope for humanity, and it's a question of whether or not we're willing to use it for what it is.
Do you think we'll see a reaction from the powers that be? I mean, when they see this and understand this, I mean, this is a revolution. This threatens the whole existing system, the idea people can make their own cars, they can make their own trackers, they can make their own machines. They don't need big business. They don't need the banks. Will there be a reaction of the sort we talked about at the beginning of the program in England, where they've passed a law to say hate speech will get you sent off to a re-education camp? Will people advocate open source ecology, will they also be threatened with re-education camps if they're not careful?
Or in different ways, but yes, they will and are being threatened. And this goes from the very very specific things like making it illegal to collect rainwater on your own property. Mm-hmm. I mean, just ridiculous nonsense like that, all the way up to at this this weekend's Bilderberg meeting, they're going to be discussing something called the precariat, which means the precarious proletariat, i.e. workers who don't have full-time gainful employment. There are temporary workers, etc. They're framing this as some sort of big problem that has to be solved, obviously, with the big stick of government and corporations. But when you think about it, the precariat could be the perfect workforce, so to speak, for an open source revolution.
Exactly.
Where people are selling to each other directly, black market, gray market, under the table, cash, barter.
Get rid of all the third parties that sit in between and profit from the transactions and from the loans. We're going to have to let it go with that, James. But again, folks, take a look for open source ecology. Take a look for thecorbettreport.com. I want to thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back with Melody tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and James Corbett. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams.